Hi, this is your host, Lori Moylove with the Limitless Podcast. If you're new here, be sure to subscribe, like, and follow. Today, we have an amazing guest. It's all about going for your dreams and creativity. And we have Paul, who just, he's coined as the sensei of screenwriting. And I guess, Paul, like your background, you've been teaching, you know, for quite some time in screenwriting at UCLA. And actually, I was surprised, like all over the globe. I was like, when I started looking at the countries, I was like, wow, how cool is that? Yeah. How did that happen in Venezuela, Spain? I mean, Australia. So even some of our listeners are in those countries too. So it's exciting because, you know, story is everywhere. And right. So I guess, how did you get the nickname? I guess your book even that you just came out with is called The Sensei of Screenwriting. How did you get that nickname? Because I guess it happened in schools or students called you that?
Right, exactly. Well, I had a student, actually, the student was from Mexico, but this was at Loyola Marymount University where I ended up teaching after UCLA. And he just one day said, Sensei, can you tell me about, and I thought, Sensei, okay. That's what you hear, you know, in The Karate Kid and other places. But sensei just means teacher or means somebody who shows you the path ahead. And that's what I like to say, that I'm shining a light on the path. You don't always have to go where I'm shining light, but this is the easiest way to go at first. Later on, if you want to take your own path, you can shine your own light anywhere you want to go. But this is the easiest way. So after he called me sensei, several other students started to do that. And then that was kind of like my nickname. And then I would call him Grasshopper. Do you know that?
Yeah.
From what was the name of that series? Well, it was from a series from the 70s where he was called the central character was called Grasshopper. So it stuck, and I use it because I want people to understand that there's no one way to do things, but I am showing you a way that works and that many people take, but you're free to choose your own way once you master this. And that's the way it goes.
Yeah, with screenwriting, I mean, it's a different thing than writing, you know, just like even with your book, it's a different format than writing, you know, like a book. I guess, could you go into maybe some of the elements that go into screenwriting? Because some of our listeners, maybe they have this budding idea or they want to share their own story. So it's like, can they dig into their creativity through screenwriting?
Well, that's a big question.
Yeah.
Screenwriting is different from novel writing. Novel writing is so free. You can write a novel any way you want to write a novel. You can write it as an epistolary novel, meaning writing letters back and forth. You can write it like newspaper clippings. You can write it like a diary. You can write it just freestyle, just off the top of your head, like Joyce did. You know, you can write it any which way you want to do it, and people will read it because they have the time to read it and hold it and sit down. However, in a movie, we only have 90 to 120 minutes usually, and you've got to get out the information. You've got to get out the characters. You've got to get out their struggles, their wants, their needs, their goals. You have to get out it as fast as possible and as dramatically as possible. So to do that, there's a format, and I won't call it a formula, but there's a format that people use. And it usually has seven steps. And this is what I like, or seven stages, or seven points. You can call it whatever you want to call it, but it's a way that we have formulated a three-act play that has worked for the last 120 years. And since it's worked, that's the way most people approach a screenplay. If you approach it another way, you may or may not be successful in that, and people may or may not understand what you've done. That's not to say you can't do it that way, because there are movies that are done that way. That way meaning completely crazy or completely different, like Everything All at Once. What was it? Everything Everywhere All at Once. Who knows what they used as their guiding light? But it was kind of crazy. And still, I loved it. It was fantastic. So it's a good movie because it shows you something different and something new. But when you're first starting out, it's a good idea to use the traditional screenplay format. And that's what I talk about in my book. And let me just show you the cover of the book.
Yeah.
There it is. The screenplay, Screenwriting Sensei. And it's available from MWP.com or Amazon.com right now. So you can get it. It officially publishes September 9th, but it's available from the MWP website right now.
And I love how you picked a crane. I guess, how did that kind of, because I would say crane's very detailed, and I would say even screenwriting is that way. I guess, is that kind of how you selected that?
Well, I didn't select that. They have a great designer of book covers, and he came up with that. This is an origami crane. So not only that, it is from a page of one of my scripts.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah.
But there's writing on the page, and that's from one of my scripts, from The Wedding Dress, as a matter of fact.
Oh, awesome.
Which I wrote and directed and is available. Anyway, yes, he chose that. And I thought, wow, what a brilliant idea, because it's taking something, a piece of paper, and making it into a piece of art. And that is basically what screenwriters do. They take a piece of paper, they write words on it, and then directors take that and they make it into a piece of art. So it was a brilliant idea. I give credit to my publisher, who always chooses the best artists to do their book covers.
Awesome. Yeah. And I know, like, even your background, let's go to some of, we even have younger folks. You started doing plays, like, I guess it was at age 11, and they were saying the studios, that was too old. Like, I guess I just was shocked on that. So I guess, can you tell me how your creative journey started? Because a lot of our listeners, you know, they're at various ages and different stages of where they are going to dive into screenwriting. I guess, can you share, like, even at age 11, what were you thinking creatively?
Well, age 11, I was supposed to be giving a report on how cavemen and women lived. And this is funny. I haven't thought about this in a very long time. And I remember gathering a couple of my classmates in the cloakroom, because that's where we had to rehearse, in the cloakroom. This is back east in Cleveland. So we had a cloakroom because it was cold and we had to hang up our jackets. And I gathered them there and I said, you know, here's what we're going to do. Instead of just talking about how cavemen and women did things, we're going to do it. And we're going to pretend that we're making our fire and we're cooking something and we're making clothes. And we're going to. So I did a little play then. I didn't realize it was a play, but that's what it was. And then later on, I joke about how that prepared me to read unsolicited manuscripts later on when I was working for Twilight Zone or for other shows and reading manuscripts that were sent in. Sometimes you think, what were they thinking? What? Please don't. Yeah. Read it over before you send it to me, at least.
Yeah.
Because some people don't, and they don't punctuate. They don't write complete sentences. They don't do a lot of things, and they don't think about story. And that's the important thing that you have to think about before you sit down to write a screenplay. What is the story here? And let me define story for you. There's a person. The person has a goal. There's a wall between the person and the goal. And the person has to go over, under, around, or through the wall to get to the goal. So in other words, there has to be something that the person wants, and that person has to fight to get it. And that is what movies are all about. Now, as it turns out, in the first part of the movie, the person thinks that they want something, and that's the important goal. But about the middle of the movie, they realize that's not the goal at all. What they really need is something else. And so the second half of the movie is trying to reach the goal of the need, whatever that person needs. So at the first part, it might be finding the treasure. But in the second part is what they really need to do is reunite their family. So you see the difference between a want and a need. Now, that doesn't mean you leave off the want. You might still get the treasure. But the real treasure is the family. That is the real need. So that's what I explain to my students, that this is the way that you approach things. It's always about the want and the need. And it's always about the conflict. And it's always about the wall that you have to go over, under, around, or through. Now, that happens in every scene as well. every scene has to have conflict as well. And so in every scene, there has to be a barrier for your central character to either go over, around, or across, or through, or whatever it is. Now, not every scene has a central character, but the central character of the movie, but every scene has a central character. So even though the scene is just about the antagonist or the villain of the movie, the villain has a goal, and the villain has to go over, under, around, or through the wall to get to his or her goal. Now, in the end, the villain fails, we hope, because in the final challenge, the protagonist overcomes whatever the wall is, and the villain, or the earthquake, or the tsunami, or, you know, outer space, whatever it is, they overcome that, and then they reach their goal. So I just basically told you the 7 points. I'll do it again. But the 7 points, let's talk about the 7 points of a film and of a scene and of a sequence. They're all the same. The first point is the ordinary life of the central character. So we see that character in his or her ordinary life, and we see what it is in their personality is preventing them from having the perfect life. They're greedy, they're self-centered, whatever it is, we see that. Even if it's not a big thing, even if they're just a little bit selfish, we see that in the first part of the movie, the first 15 minutes. After that, then there's something called the inciting incident. And in the inciting incident, that's something that comes from the outside that affects your central character in a way that they're going to have to make a choice. For example, they lose their job, they get divorced, they lose an arm, they are in an accident, something happens to them, and they're going to have to make a choice. And the next part is they're trying to figure out what that choice is. And the third point of the movie is the end of Act One, when they make a choice. Here is my goal. Here's what I have to do to solve the problem that was created by the inciting incident. They create the want. Here's what I want to do to solve this problem. And then through the second act, they begin working towards that goal. And at the midpoint, they realize, that might not be the right thing. Something happens to them from the outside again. And they realize, maybe that's not what my real goal is. My real goal is something else. They also realize something about themselves, which is they realize what their flaw was, and that they were selfish, or they were self-centered, or they were miserly, or whatever it was that they were. They realize that, and they have to overcome that. They realize they have to overcome that to achieve their need, what they really need to achieve. The fourth point is the low point, and that is when it looks like everything's gone to hell. There's no way they're going to reach their goal. And we've seen this in every movie you've ever seen. It looks like your central character is not going to reach their goal. And that tension is what makes those things really great. And then your central character has to work towards, he has to have a dark night of the soul where he kind of figures out, what the hell happened to me? And then something usually comes from outside again to remind them of what their goal is. They see a picture of their girlfriend. Their best friend says, hey, Joe, you've got to save your mom. Somebody tells them, reminds them of what the goal is, what the need is. And then they have a final challenge. And that is the sixth point of your story. And that is what some other people call the crisis or the climax. That is when your central character overcomes the barrier that's between him or her and the goal. And then there's the return to normal life, where we see the character now able to appreciate their achievement and to appreciate the new life that they've created and appreciate having reached their goal. Now, people criticize Hollywood films for having a happy ending, but not every Hollywood film has a happy ending, but it has a satisfying ending where your central character reaches his or her goal. For example, Gladiator, which came out, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, something like that. The central character dies in the final challenge, but he achieves his goal, which is to reunite with his family. So it doesn't... It's sort of happy, but not happy. I mean, he dies. So, there's that. But your central character reaches what he really needed. And what he needed was to reunite with his family. So those are, that's how a movie is made. And that's how every scene is made. Every scene has that. We don't always see all those points in a scene because we don't have time to do that. Sometimes we start at the inciting incident of the scene because we realize where that central character has been, what he's been doing, what his ordinary life of that scene was. Or we can even start a little later than that. We usually have a middle part of the scene and we usually have the climax of the scene, but we don't always have the return to normal life in a scene because we understand what's going to happen and the central character goes off to the next scene. Sometimes we can even skip the fight. You know, if there's a big fight, and I use an example of a scene I made up, but I'm just going to shorten it really fast for you, where the central character has been called out into the alley and people jump on him and there's a fight. And then the next thing we see is he's walking down the street whistling with a black eye. So what if we don't have the fight and we just see him getting jumped? We don't see the fight. We just see him walking down the street with a black eye. Well, we know the fight happened.
Yeah.
So sometimes you can use a shorthand to move the scene along fast because the idea is to move fast. Every scene has to move fast or you're stuck in a Hungarian film where there's 3 hours of guys sitting eating. And there's a particular director I could cite, but I'm not going to do that. But anyway, scenes have that and sequences have that. Sequences are groups of scenes that have a common purpose. And we see that all the time. And Thelma and Louise, there's great structure in Thelma and Louise. And their sequences are perfectly constructed with the beginning, middle, and an end, with the 7 points, everything is there. So that's a very important thing to know as you're writing. If you start off your writing by thinking, well, there are many ways to start writing a script. There's thinking about a person that you want to write about, or thinking a situation you want to write about, or thinking about an idea you want to express. You can start all those using all those things, but you have to remember that you have to have a structure. Mm-hmm. And you find your structure by finding who your character is and what your character wants and then what your character really needs. And then you can build your character and you can build what is opposing your character. And then you start building your story. There you go.
Yeah. And these 7 points, it's funny because I just watched K-pop Demon Hunters and they were your students, I guess. So, and literally, I feel like after just watching that recently and you talking about these seven, like, I can see it now in the in the K-pop Demon Hunter film. Like I can see how that structure and foundation was put there. And I'm like, wow, okay, that was a perfect case study. They must have read your book before it came out.
Well, they had my class. I'm trying to remember when they were in my class, but it was at least 5 or 6 years ago. I think it's a little bit longer than that. They're two brilliant young ladies. I mean, they really are smart. And they bonded in my class so much so that we always refer to them, instead of Hannah and Danya, they called themselves Hanya.
I love that.
Yeah, they combined the word. And so I use that when I talk to them. Mm-hmm. And I just wrote them a congratulatory email to both of them. And I addressed them as Hanya.
Oh, that's exciting.
They were very smart. But yes, they learned the 7 points in my class. And I'm sure they learned the similar kinds of structure in other classes. Mm-hmm. I'm not the only person that's come up with this kind of a structure. But I'm the one that defined it so clearly. So mm-hmm. you can say 7 points. Okay, do I have the 7 points? That's the first thing to do. Once you've got your characters, then you have to figure out what the barriers are. And then you have to figure out the 7 points. And then after that, if you look at screenwriting like building, you have to build a foundation, then you build the framing, then you build the walls, then you build the interior. Well, you do the same thing with screenwriting. You do the 7 points, then you build a beat sheet, which is a short description of each scene. And then you build a treatment, which is a prose description of each scene, but more extended. And then you write your screenplay. And by the time you're at that stage, it's pretty easy to do. You just fill it out. It's like filling out books, because you've set everything up. You've made your structure. You've created your characters. You know where you're going. Your characters are talking to you because you've developed them so well by writing their full biographies. When they start talking to you, you just kind of sit there and you transcribe it. And that's the way it goes, because you've got a guideline all the way through. You've got a perfect description, an outline of your story. And once you have that, it's a lot easier to write. You don't have writer's block.
Right. Yeah. I think that's the thing. A lot of writers they're like, okay, I'm staring at the page and I don't know where to go. But if you have the 7 points, your beat sheet, your treatment, you're then kind of ready to go when you're like staring at the blank thing. You're like, oh no, wait, I have the foundation. I'm good. And then you can start writing. One thing I have a question for you about, Paul, is like, I notice also you're very active with the Writers Guild and very much an advocate for writers and creating community. I was wondering if you could kind of share a little bit about creating a creative community and how, as a writer, to share your work and be creative and also be open to feedback. Because I think that's the one thing that I think sometimes writers are like, oh, this person gave me a note and I wasn't ready for that note. So I guess, can you like share a little bit of your experience in that with creating creative community and also feedback?
Okay. All right. Well, that's very interesting. You know, I've done... I think I'll start with the seminars that I've created, and then I'm going to go to something that I'm creating right now in my own community.
Exciting.
So remind me if I forget, if I go off on a tangent, please remind me. During one of the classes I taught at UCLA's professional program in screenwriting, it was a rewriting class. And one of the students said, you know, I'm so distracted by my home life and by my work and my kids and everything, you know, the telephone and the movies. And what I really need is some time on a beach in Italy. And I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. And then one of my students in the class said, well, my uncle has a villa in Italy. And I said, well, let's talk after class. And so from that grew a series of seminars that I gave in Italy, France, and Spain, where I would gather 8 writers, either from UCLA or just out there, people that kind of got in touch with me, to go away for 2 weeks and live in a big house. We would provide all the meals. So then people didn't have to think about anything. They didn't have to clean their room. They didn't have to listen to their spouses. They didn't have to listen to their kids. They didn't have to listen to the radio or the telephone. All they had to do was listen to us, all of the other participants in this, and write. So everybody wrote in the morning, and then we'd have seminar in the afternoon. Or sometimes people would write in the evening, but we still had the seminar right after lunch, so that they could either write in the morning or play in the morning or visit someplace in the morning, have a seminar, then write. So that created a group of people. Some of those people came to my seminars overseas 3 or 4 times. Wow. Because it was so intense and so perfect for writing. They could find the time to write and just focus on that. So 4 years ago, I moved to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, after having lived in Los Angeles almost 45 years. And I love Los Angeles, except it's big and it's crowded and it's noisy and it's expensive. And my daughter moved to Durham, North Carolina, which is 12 miles from Chapel Hill. And she got married and she got pregnant. And we said, maybe that's a good place to retire to. And I retired from teaching. I had been teaching for 20 years. After 20 years writing, writing for television mostly, sometimes for films. So we moved to Chapel Hill. So about 6 months ago, my daughter's father-in-law said to me, and we've become really good friends. He's a great guy. He said, you know, I've been thinking about, I've been listening to old-time radio dramas on Spotify. And I thought, well, that's interesting. He said, why don't you do a podcast of dramas, of your own dramas? And I said, that's a good idea. And I stopped and I did some research. And I found out that's a lot more than I want to do right now. There's a lot to a podcast, as you know.
Yeah.
A podcast, there's a lot to do that. Mm-hmm. And especially if you're organizing actors for it and plays and all kinds. Mm-hmm. So instead, I was talking to a friend of mine who just moved here from Los Angeles, actually from Portland, Oregon. She had lived in Los Angeles. That's where I knew her. And I've known her for 40 years. And she is an actor and a dialect coach. And you've heard her voice 100 times. Did you ever watch G.I. Joe? Remember the cartoon G.I. Joe? There was one, Lightyear. Did you see the film Lightyear a couple of years ago? Buzz Lightyear?
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
She's the voice of the spaceship and voice in Lightyear. She was also the voice of OnStar. You remember that thing that was in the cars?
Yeah.
She was the voice of that. Anyway, she's a voice actor. And she said, well, what I did in Portland was I had reader's theater. So we would read a play just for 1 hour. And people would come and they would just listen to the play. It's like radio. Mm-hmm. So we decided to do that here. So now we founded something called Southern Village Readers Theater. And we're developing a core of writers and actors. And our first presentation is in October. We went to I live in an area, a development that has its own center core, like a downtown. We call it the Village Green. And there are shops and businesses around the screen. And one of the businesses is a movie theater called the Lumina. And we went to talk to them and they said, okay, you can use this room. They had a bar in there. The liquor laws in this state are very different. And they have a bar in the theater and there's a room behind the bar. So we're going to use the room behind the bar for reading to do our first performances. Then people can filter into the bar and talk to the actors and get a drink. And then if we develop more than a larger audience, we're going to be able to use one of the theaters if we do it on a Thursday night, because that's the least busy night for them. And that's when they change over to another movie. Mm-hmm. So we can use one of their theaters. They have 5 theaters, so we can use one of their theaters.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And
Well, you'll have to send me a link so that I can put this in the episode so more of our listeners who are maybe based in your area can kind of find you guys to come.
Oh, that would be great. That would be great. I'll do that. We're in the process of setting up a Facebook page.
Awesome.
And as soon as I have that, I'll send it to you, Lori.
Fantastic. Yeah. So now we're in a lightning round. We're calling this plot twists and popcorn. So are you ready for plot twists and popcorn?
I'm ready. Go.
Speaking of the theater. So rewrite or reboot The Godfather or Titanic?
Oh, I would reboot The Titanic.
Ooh, interesting. Okay. Who would best play your movie of your life? I guess you could pick any actor.
Oh, you know, Adam Driver.
Ooh, okay. I love that. That's a good choice right there.
He's a lot taller than I am, but okay.
No one knows. We could use movie magic for that.
Exactly.
Who, I guess, would you rather write a rom-com starring Bigfoot or a political thriller starring aliens?
Well, we already have a political thriller starring an alien in our country right now, so I don't know if I need to write that.
So it's writing itself, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
So 3 words that every screenplay needs.
Conflict, conflict, and conflict.
So it's a whole lot of conflict. Okay, name a movie that's like, I guess, a movie that you're kind of like, you love it, but you're a little bit embarrassed to admit it.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I just saw one last night. It's called The Thursday Murder Club. And it's on Netflix. It's Helen Mirren, Pierce Brosnan. It's incredible. It's really fun. You kind of predict it, but it doesn't matter. It's just it's great to see characters of that age being smart.
Ooh, I love that. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to have to check that one out. I haven't seen that yet.
Just came out.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, and then what about What's one, like, if you could only pick one screenwriting software, because, you know, we're now about software, what would you choose? Or would you choose Final Draft, Celtics, pen or paper?
Oh gosh, never use Celtics. It doesn't translate to PDF very well, and it doesn't have all the things that you need. I used to use Scriptwriter.
Okay.
Then I switched to Final Draft, and Final Draft does everything.
So yeah.
There's no point in using anything else. If you're a student, you can get a student price for it. I know Celtics is free. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of front, the page or on the page, something like that. That's also free. Don't do that.
Good to know.
Yeah. Invest in your future.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay. What's the worst on-set snack you've ever seen? Being that you've worked on productions and stuff.
Oh, let me think. Well, I used to have a popcorn machine in my office, next to my office. On the Paramount lot, and that it created this sour kind of popcorn. It was awful. Yeah, so that was one of the snacks.
I don't know about that type of sour popcorn, but that could be for maybe another company that wants to do sour popcorn. Okay, what about describe your writing style? I guess cocktail, mocktail, you neat, shaken, or on the rocks?
I'm stirred.
We love that. Stirred with all seven.
Right.
And then which classic film would you say would be ruined by texting if it had texting in it? Because like a lot of content has texting scenes in it.
Yeah, that's the latest craze, is to have texting in it. There's almost every classic film would be ruined by texting. I mean, can you imagine The Maltese Falcon with texting, or The Godfather with texting, or Les Enfants du Paradis with texting? That would be awful.
Very true. And then who would you rather take script notes from, Scorsese, Tarantino, or your mom?
Well, my mom would give me emotional notes, but Scorsese would give me notes that would be helpful. Tarantino would be far out there. Although he's done some incredible stuff, but Scorsese knows everything.
Okay.
So I would trust him.
Awesome. And I ask all of my guests, like, one word that connects them to dreams, creativity. Paul, I guess, what would your one word be?
My word would be open. You have to be open to thinking outside of the way you've been thinking all your life. You have to be open to thinking, to listening to people, especially when you're making movies. You know, script writing is very collaborative, and so is movie making. And you should listen to the people that read your script, and you should listen to the people that work on your movie, because they all have something to contribute. It doesn't mean you have to take everything that they tell you and do it, especially when you're writing your script. You listen to it, you think, maybe that would work, maybe that would not work. You make that decision, but you have to listen and say, let's see if that will work or not work. When you're on the set, if you're directing a movie, you listen to everybody, because everybody's got their job and they know what they're doing and they can contribute to your film. If you listen to them, they will improve your film, because the goal always is to make a great film. It's not to make a great ego. I already have enough ego. I don't need any more ego. I want to make a great film. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to the people around you, you will make a great film.
Yeah, I love that. You're the first guest that has said open, but it's really true in the sense of creativity and going for your dreams, because we're kind of like receivers out there. The more feedback we get, the better we can improve our creativity. So thank you so much, Paul. And I know, where can some of our listeners, I guess, show us your book again? Where can they get The Sensei Screenwriter, and where can they find you and follow you?
Well, you can find me on Facebook. You can find me at paulchitlick.com. You can find me on Instagram at paulchitlick. You can find me on X at paulchitlick. You can find me on Threads at paulchitlick. I'm all over the place.
You're everywhere.
I'm like Superman. You can also find me at MWP.com. That's where I have three books, actually. I have one on rewriting, another one called 39 Steps to Better Screenwriting, which is just basically like a blog that I wrote. You can also find me on Amazon.com. Just look up my name, Paul Chitlick, C-H-I-T-L-I-K. And there you go. I've got other books. Let's see. I've got a series of mysteries based on a character called Burns.
I love that.
Rob Burns. My latest book is called Lies, All Lies. It's about a young actor, writer, director who one day finds himself standing soaking wet at a poolside at a Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, holding two dry tickets to the Emmy Awards, and he doesn't know who he is, where he is, or why he's standing there. And he has to figure out who he was and who he wants to be.
Wow. So
I've written a pilot for that. We're talking about just attached a director to it.
How exciting.
We're now talking to production companies about it.